Okay. So yesterday we focused on the lines of halacha adifa or maaseh rav, but then the Gemara continues. Tanu rabbanan ein lemeidin halacha lo mipi lamud velo mipi maaseh. You don't derive halacha not from limud, right? Things that you learn as theoretical learning, nor maaseh from a story that happened, because you might misunderstand why someone paskins a certain way. Until Achayomrolo halacha lemaaseh, and they tell you this is halacha, theoretical law lemaaseh, that should be applied in practice. Right? And we talked about yesterday that besides for this figure, there's at least three other places where this becomes important. Right? I mentioned at the end of Shir, what were they? Your putzer, Ezra. What? There's Gemara Nivamot, very good, by the Beis Din, who tells a woman that you can remarry on the assumption that her husband has died. So even if she is involved in extramarital, whatever, affair is not really the right thing to say, because in halacha it's different, but meaning she is involved with someone outside the context of marriage, even though it shouldn't be different fundamentally from being involved in getting married, because at the end of the day, if her husband is, she's not married, right? And therefore, neither of them should carry the death penalty or any of the consequences. Since Beis Din didn't actually tell her, you can just sleep around, they told her you can remarry, they, even though it's derived from the same principle, she still carries some of the consequences because she isn't relying on the Pesach of Beis Din. The other two contexts were, right, when Beis Din makes a mistake, so if Beis Din makes a mistake and the people follow it, so then you bring a Par HaLem Davar Shel Tzibur, the unique carbon by Beis Din on behalf of the people, it requires two factors, which is a Pesach and the following of said Pesach. In order to be qualify as the as a Pesach, it needs halacha l'maaseh. And the third case was, Rami? Zakein Mamre. I don't know why you're doing a Zakein Mamre dance, but yeah, the Zakein Mamre dance. Yes, fine, Zakein Mamre. Yes, is the rebellious elder who is only liable, right, if he just says in Lamdus, I think the medicine is wrong, he submits an amicus brief, I think you should consider differently, that's fine. But if he rules differently, he's a Zakein Mamre. Yeah, Ezra. The latter two cases, yes, the first case, no. Meaning the case of the woman remarrying can be any Beit Din. The Zakein Mamre and Parel Am Davar Shel Tzibur or our halachot that are contingent in the high court.
So for like the perception that whatever the Beit
Din says,
like,
were they doing that, like, cannot make sense? Okay, I'll say this in brackets here. Maybe we can spend more time on it. That which you grew up with, which is Rashi, which is Lo Tasrim Ena Davar She Yigid Lecha Yamin U'Smol Afilu Omrin Chal Yamin She U'Smol Val Smol Shehu Yamin, right? Don't stray from what the rabbis say, left or right, even if they tell you left is right and right is left, is explicitly against the Yerushalmi and probably against the Bavli also. The Yerushalmi in Horayot explicitly says, Lo Tasur Min HaDavar Asher Yagidu Lecha Lo Lechet Yamin U'Smol. I will bracket the fact for the moment that they are quoting a non-existent pasuk, right? Lalechet yamin u'smol is, I mean, it's not a non, it's an existent pasuk, but it's not the right pasuk, which, though in the Rishonim, that is still the Girsa. So, how we get there, Rav Tzvi Hoffman tries one way, or Henkin tries the other, another way. Probably the answer is that if you look in the Dead Screen Scrolls, you'll discover that there are other versions of the Torah that have a different Girsa that says lalechet yamin u'smol. Probably the Rishonim share that Girsa. Yes, there are different Gersaot of Chamesh. Yes, this is attested to in Chazal. Yes, it shouldn't be controversial, because Chazal tell you that they sometimes had different Gersaot in the Torah, and to figure out what the proper Gersaot was, they went by rove. They found as many different, they found a bunch of Sifrei Torah, and then they just counted. And then they... In the Yerushalmi, that doesn't tell me anything. That's the simplest shot, if you ask me, is that since we have evidence that there's different Girsa in floating around, probably at least this Girsa in the Yerushalmi is following some other Girsa in Chumash. It doesn't mean it's the right Gerizah, it just means it's what they had in front of them. Whatever. I know it's horribly controversial, but I can't help but believe that that's the easiest shot in Yerushalmi, but admittedly, Rav Tzvi Hoffman and Rav Henkin go differently. What?
There's another shot?
Yes, I just said that Rav Tzvi Hoffman and Rav Henkin both address the fact that it seems to be quoting a non-existent pasuk, and they both deal with it. But it's really not our sugya, so I'm not going to get into it. I only discovered that it was different in the Des Kuzos by accident. That wasn't like... Anyway. Fine. So Yerushalmi on that line says, Lalechet yamin u'smol, yachol, you might have thought, afilu omen lecha yamin shu smol v'asmol shu yamin, you might have thought that even if they tell you it's right is left is right, Talmud lomar, Lalechet yamin u'smol, rakim omen lecha yamin shu yamin v'asmol shu shmol, smol shu shmol, only if they tell you right is right and left is left. But they tell you left is right and right is left, you cannot listen to them. Right? That's the Yerushalmi, Bifeirush. The Bavli almost explicitly says the same thing, because the first sugya in Hurriya brings the case of a Talmid Shehigia Lahora'ah, of a student who reached the level of Psak, who, if he follows the Beit Din in their mistake, has to bring his own karban. Okay? He can't rely on the Par Halam Devar Shel Tzibur. So the Gemara asks the obvious question. What's the case? If he, as big a Talmud Chacham as he was, made a mistake just like everybody else, so he should go along with the Paralam Davar Shel Tzibur. If he knew that Beis Din was lying, was wrong, and nevertheless he went and followed them, so he can't bring a karban, why not?
Because
he's mazed. He's an intentional sinner. And intentional sinners don't bring a karban. It's only accidental sinners. So the Gemara said, what's the case in which he's considered accidental and yet brings a karban, but not the paralam davar shel tzibur? So the Gemara says, b'ta'a b'mitzvah l'shmoa divrei chachamim. He made a mistake in the parameters of the mitzvah to listen to the rabbis. Right? The implication being, what's his mistake? He thought he was supposed to follow Beit Din even when they were wrong. But he's wrong about that. You don't do that. You only follow Beit Din when they're right. Right? So where does Rashi get it? The answer is the Midrash Halakha. Except there's two Girsah in the Midrash Halakha. One Girsah, the Midrash Halakha, says, Afilu Omen Lacha Yamin Shu Smol Vasmu Shal Yamin. That you listen to the rabbis even if they say right is left and left is right. But there's another girth on the Sifrei, which says, Afilo marim be'enecha. If it seems to you that they're wrong, so then you follow them, which implies that's only because you are probably making a mistake. But if they were making a mistake, you wouldn't follow them. So the Yerushalmi explicitly, the Bavli implicitly, and half the girsot in the Midrash Halacha. Correct, but so in the end of the day, the Yerushalmi and the Bavli both imply that no, you don't follow Beit Din when they're wrong, and the Sifrei divides. So I know this shatters much belief that people have. I get it. What? Yeah. It's one of those things that like. Anyways, but yes. You are 100% correct, Esha, that this throws quite the monkey wrench in the Shita that is attributed to Rashi, which is extremely problematic in both the Bavli and the Yerushalmi.
But
it's you'll tell me, the story of Rabbi Gamliel, Rabbi Yeshua. Very good, Ezra, thank you. Alright, what about that case? Yeah, there seems to be unique halachot to the case of the calendar, where the calendar is the only case where the Gemara explicitly says in Rosh Hashanah Daf Chaf Hei that atem afilu shogegin, atem afilu mezidin, atem afilu mutain, that you follow the Beit Din even if they are intentionally making a mistake or if they are mistaken. The question is, do you extrapolate from the case of the calendar to other cases. But this, but. Maybe. Tanur Shalachnai is a complicated sugya in that sense. But yes, this is a fascinating sugya. I love going through it, and it's very complicated. Right? The Ramban does seem to take a more radical approach, that Beis Din cannot be wrong, right, in that sense. But it's not a majority. I don't know if it's a majority. I don't think it's a majority view. It's complicated. You know, every so often I return to this sugya. I'm in the middle of returning to it again, right, because I went to the library and found this wonderful 500-page book on the balance of autonomy and autonomy versus authority in halakha. You're free to read it, but you're not going to because it's over 500 pages in academic Hebrew, so you're just not. Well, I just don't. Yeah, it was not a joke. It's just like not written in easy. It's not written in English, which I know is already a problem, and it's not easy Hebrew. It's not easy Hebrew either, right? This is not like read it, you know. Sure, you want to read Bein Samchut Lo Autonomia B'Misoret Yisrael. I mean, you're free to. It's fascinating. I don't know. Here, random page. Let's see if you understand this sentence. Lo zu bilvad sheha'iyum ha'kitzoni sheha'moderniyot titziva b'fnei kilatam ne'alam ke'l'umat sheba ela she'em gam yatsu me'ha'imut k'she'adam al ha'elyona. That's actually a relatively simple sentence compared to other sentences in this book. Yeah, thanks. Good, Ezra. I'm glad you had a story about a rabbi who disappeared. Okay, fine. So, fine. So then the Gemara, so back to our Gemara. The Gemara then says, Ubilvad shelo yidameh. As long as you don't extrapolate or compare, or probably the best word is analogize. Right? Meaning, lo yidameh, what? Yeah, I mean, don't derive by analogy. Right? By comparison. Right? I'm pretty sure analogize is a verb, I think. I'm pretty sure. I could be wrong.
Actually, it's actually analogize. It's the right English.
Thank you. Just like prophesy. Thank you. I got what you're doing. I don't think that's true, but yes. Give me a break, you know. I haven't lived in America in quite a while.
I don't know.
Yeah. You know, the new English I hear is from you guys. You know, I don't know what that does to my vocabulary.
Like, all right,
what? What?
I mean, it is both of those are.
Yeah. Fine. And he says, so the Gemara says, what do you mean you shouldn't derive by analogy? But v'hakol ha-Torah kula. Dimuye middaminan law. What does that mean? Gavi, what does that mean? Hakola darakula.
The entire Torah is extrapolated.
Yes, like what? Have you ever learned anything? Right, the Gemara is basically saying, have you ever learned anything? What exactly do you think we do all day? Right? We compare, we do that. That's what we do. So the Gemara this says, Amar of Ashi, Hachi ka Amar. Ubilvad shilo yidameh bitrefot. As long as you don't compare by trefot. What is trefa?
Oh,
okay. So here is something you should know for life, okay?
Oh.
What does tref mean in contemporaneous slang? Not kosher. Very good. What does tref mean in halachic language? Sure. An animal that has one of these specific 18 simanei karfut, meaning it's unhealthy and therefore doomed to die in the precise ways that the Mishnah lists.
What does that? What does the word mean?
It means torn, yes.
And what's the
Shechita? So the difference, Nivela is an animal that dies without Shechita. And a treva is a terminally ill animal, though, as mostly understood based on the Rambam, only if it's terminally ill in the specific ways that the Masorah outlines.
And what does
Nivela
mean? Like, what's the
animal?
Corpse.
Yeah. Like, a Nivela is an animal that dies. Right? So, like, a cow that is shot rather than shechted is a Nivela. Right, a healthy cow that's killed by electrocution or something, I don't know, right? A trefa could be an animal that shechted, but had a punctured lung.
Glot.
Glot means that its lung was smooth, correct.
Meaning not punctured?
No, meaning it had no, if it was punctured, it's a trefa.
Yeah.
If it's not glot, it means it had some sort of adhesion on the lung. Which might be problematic, or is, right, glot means that you don't even have a chash, right, because it was smooth. You didn't have to check whether those adhesions made it a trefa or not, right? Something which is not glot can still be kosher, right? It just means that you're not relying on checking, right? You're just finding lungs that don't have any potential problems. Right, meaning it could have an adhesion, doesn't make it a trefa, right? And then you can check. Right, you blow up the lung to figure it out, da 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 da. Right? But glot means that the lung is smooth. Yeah. Glot just means smooth. That's what the word means. Glot does not mean like mahadran bin mahadran. Glot means smooth. Yiddish for smooth. Yeah. That's all. Like, that's all it means. Yeah. That's why, like, you can't have glot kosher dairy. That makes no sense, right? It's not kosher mahadrin. It's smooth lungs. That's what it means. Sure, but that's not what they mean, right? Glot kosher cheese. I mean, I don't know what you're talking about. Oyer on water bottles is something that is requested by the water companies. Or from other people, yeah. There are a lot of people who look for kosher symbols for evidence of veganism, of purity. They have all types of weird conceptions of what kosher does, and they like attracting all of those people. That is not initiated by the OU.
What?
I don't think they actually do on these. They don't charge. They charge minimally for that type of hatcher. That was Reb Ganach told me when I was in Smicha. He's the head of OU Kosher. Right? He said, like, this is the kosher, the companies want it, and, like, if there's no or minimal checking, right, involved, so they charge less, I think. I can't promise you this. Sure, that's what he told me. I mean, the proceeds go to a lot of things because they use that money to fund a whole bunch of different communal things. Yeah. Kosher is a fascinating, industrial kosher is a fascinating, fascinating world. Kosher, kosher, you know, it's in the Torah, yeah. It's not blessed by a rabbi, you know. Yeah, it's cheder kosher. Yeah. The world of industrial kosher is fascinating. I encourage you to read up on it. It's really fascinating. There are three books that I know of that tackle it from different angles. One is simply called Kosher by Timothy Litton, who's an economist. It's a fascinating book. He studied koshers as a test case of non-governmental supervision, right? As like a possible model for like, privatizing like, yeah, veganism and, I don't know, environmental things and stuff like that, because kosher is the most sort of developed. And he said that he entered into the study very cynical about, you know, industrial kosher. And he said after he actually researched it, he walked away with a lot of respect, meaning he thought that it was all, that he was going to come in and find out that it was all like money and whatever. And then he discovered, no, like it was the way kosher developed makes a lot of sense from a sort of a business standards trust perspective, and he walked away with a lot of respect for it. It's a very interesting book. It's written from an economics perspective. There are two others. One is Kosher USA, which is a bunch of like case studies. And the other is Kosher Nation, also case studies from different perspectives. I liked all of them. I liked all the books. I think I liked Kosher by Litton the most, and then Kosher USA, and then Kosher Nation, but they were all different. Yeah, Kosher Nation is more written from a journalistic perspective, right? So it's like, yeah, but they have interesting things, the history of kosher wine in America, the history of kosher meat, right? Kosher meat has seen a downturn, right? Meaning at the height of kosher meat, like in the 50s, I think it was, 25% of all meat in America was kosher.
Whoa.
Yeah, exactly, right?
That was before they made the stuff, right?
Yeah. It was like, it's a fascinating stuff. Okay. Yeah, it's very interesting. It's worth reading up on it. Okay, so the Gemara says, so why by trefo? Titanya, ain't omen by trefo, zo dome lezo. You never say by trefo, this is similar to that. Now, you'll tell me why not. Why is trefo different from everything else? So there's a very simple reason. The Gemara says, what is it? V'al tigma, don't be shocked that trefo are different. Why? Because it's very simple. If you cut an animal from one side, it'll live. If you cut it from the other side, it will die. Meaning, the very simple shot of this Gemara is like this. Lumdus, you can start doing like, we can compare Hilchos Brachos to Hilchos Shabbos in this way, right? It's not like how medical things work. It's not like, alcohol in low quantities is enjoyable. So clearly in high quantities, it is also going to be enjoyable. So, instead of having 10 cups of, 10% alcoholic wine, why don't I just give you 1 8-ounce cup of 100% alcohol, right? We all know that the consequences of those are not the same, right? That's not how things work. If you don't know that, you should know that. That undiluted alcohol at 100% will kill you, right? Because alcohol is a toxin, right? I'm not saying you should have 10 cups of wine in one sitting either. Not a great idea, right? Even though the Gemara tells you that that's what you used to do at Shifa houses. Go figure. Not 10, 12, but fine. Diluted. Well, it's apparently just what they drank. Or they go 8 cups, 12 cups, whatever. But, when it comes to medicine, that's not how it works. It's like, right, the Gemara says, you cut from one side, he lives. You cut from the other side, he dies. Yes, right? If a surgeon is going in to remove a tumor, if he removes the tumor, he'll make the guy better. You know, if it's a lung cancer, if he removes the tumor, right, he'll live. If he removes the lung, pachot tov, right? And this is the problem with cancer. Yes, right? I'm going through the biography of cancer now. So it's on my mind. Well, yes, it's a history of cancer, but the author decided the way she writes it is more of a biography. So that's what it's called, the biography of cancer. That's the subtitle. The book is called, I think, The Emperor of All Maladies. It's very good. It won the Pulitzer Prize. I borrowed it from my sister-in-law. So that's the thing with trefo, right? You can't just compare trefo, because trefo are mitzvos, right? Like, we all know that, like, in medical things, right, a growth can be benign, a growth can be malignant, right? There are nuanced differences. You can't just say, hey, that looks like the benign growth that I had, right? It might be malignant. Right, so it seems to be, if you look at Rashbam, we'll skip to that Rashbam for a minute. He says, as long as you don't try to extrapolate, so the Gemara says, what do you mean? I call it Terukula. Right? Shlomo is described as being able to compare things to the dummy. He says, no, betrayfot. Lilami zumizu kigon trefot hakaved min araya. That's like saying, oh, that growth is dangerous in the liver, so it's also dangerous in the lung. Right? That's not how things work. So let's continue. He said the way, right, the health of limbs and organs is not comparable. Right? If you cut the sinews, right, you could kill them. You cut away from it, right, an inch apart, you don't, right? We all know this is why it's important to have, right, a good surgeon who's gotten good, you know, good training and has a good night's sleep, right? Because, what? Yes, exactly. But yes, the simple shot is that this is unique, Ellie, right? That trefot are different because... Yeah, it sounds like, in that sense, trefot is sui generis, right? Meaning, trefot, I mean, think about it, right? Meaning, that's exactly the point. You can't just say, right, like we all know, right, a certain cancers, right, are treatable and certain are not treatable, right? Same size, same whatever, right? But certain cancers are much less treatable, like pancreatic cancer, right, have very low survival rates, right, or as opposed to like, I don't know, breast cancer has a much higher survival rate, right, than pancreatic cancer, right? And yes, we all know that a surgeon cuts 1 inch, you know, off, leaves the guy paralyzed.
That's how you shoot lasers.
Yes, but if you do that wrong also, right, this is why, like, anesthesiologists are paid so much, right? Because you put it in one place, or, you know, it just relieves pain. You put it, right? Because you put, like, right? I will, you know, brace you for this now, because, like, it's one of the scariest things ever, right? But please God, one day your wife is, you know, in labor, and they offer her an epidural. Epidural is like a needle this big that goes into the spinal cord, right? Yeah, I could not stay in the room for this, right? But they, like, read you what can happen to you, because if it's, like, you know, a little bit off, you will paralyze the person because you're putting it in the freaking spinal cord, right? So, yes, trefot are like that. You don't just compare and say, well, what's the difference, an inch here, an inch there? No, this is not how things work in medicine, right?
Well, I'm saying, then why, when it says, earlier in the article, when it says, you shouldn't compare them to one another, when it's talking about just when...
Well, so that's exactly what the Gemara says. What do you mean you can't compare? We always compare. And the Gemara says, no, 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 no. There's one case in which we don't want to. The simple pshat of the Gemara is only that case.
So why did the Gemara just say that one case? Like, but in trefot, we can compare. Like, why was the way to say
that? Well, I don't know. It could just be that that was like the shaila that rabbis got very commonly. It does seem to be the case. Meaning, traditionally in like Europe, right, the shaila that the rabbis got the most was this, right, was trefot, right? Meaning, the shilas, it's funny that, like, the standard smicha curriculum for many years was just modeled on what it was in Europe, except the shilas that the average rabbi now gets were very uncommon then and vice versa, because most shilas that a community rabbi got were trefot, because you didn't shecht your own animals, but, like, when you needed an animal, you went to the shulchan and you shechted it, right? And malicha, right? Salting. But nowadays, most people don't do their own. Almost no one does their own shechita, and slightly less, right? Slightly more people do their own koshering, but not so many, right? In America, I never knew a single person who had ever koshered anything. Here I do. I don't mean as like a one-time thing. I mean like on a regular basis, right? Like here, the only thing I know that people kosher is liver, right? Because here you have to be careful of this, by the way, right? In America, I never saw it. But in Israel, you go into even a kosher butcher or kosher supermarket, whatever, there will be unkoshered liver, right? Which you have to kosher if you want to eat. What? If you want, you can come next time, or a kosher's liver. Like, or learned how to kosher liver, because it's just... No, it's livers. It looks like you pulled livers out of the animal. Or it makes it into chopped liver, but first she koshers it, and then she makes it into chopped liver. So again, the Gemara doesn't believe it, because the Gemara says, what do you mean? All of Torah is comparison. It's only trefot where we don't pull those comparisons.
It makes more sense to say that it's in Torah,
Oh, I mean, you want to say maybe it's true of any mitzvahs thing, like any... Oh, yeah, I'm willing to say, I'm willing to entertain the possibility that the Gemara means something more like whenever you're dealing with physical realities, right, you can't just sort of make up conceptual analogies. Yeah, you know, I'm willing to buy that. I mean, the most prevalent case is trefos, right? 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 I mean, look, even within this, right, meaning the Rashbam seems to think that it's less about trefot per se, more about shechita, right? Right? Tosfot, if you look, doesn't like that, right? Tosfot says, Share chotcha mikan, right? Just look at that small Tosfot. It's aim of Barishkeveir Shabbeinu Shmuel. Don't understand it like the Rashbam. Chotcha mikan v'chaya, the hainu l'malam mitzvah negidin, the aber perik elu trefot, atzvah negidin, gufo kam, ratesh, ayo chotcha mikan. He says, no, wait, must be talking about a hole, like in the spleen, where you have a hole here, where he thinks it's much more limited to trefot, right, where, right, Rashbam might agree with you, that it's like that whole area, meaning like reality-related things, shechita, trefos, I don't know, you have the art scroll in front of you, what do they say, do they quote anybody else?
Well,
on that line. Rabbeinu Gershom gives a different example, right, depending on whether, right, a person is injured, because trefot can also apply to people, right, it's not just animals, right, there is not, right, if someone gets, right, is injured above or below the knee, right, right, survival rates are different, right? Lamala or Lamata Min Arakuva. Right, so treva can also be in people. People? If you kill a treva, which you shouldn't do, but you're not chayv misa, because they are already considered dying, right? So there are nafkaminas to this question, right? Right, human, so there, right, so it's not just people, it's, there are a series of halachot that are related to this. So you could be right that it could mean more broadly any reality related field, right? You know, you're right. It could be that it's not just Treva. I mean, Treva is probably the Shaila that they got the most, right? Meaning it could be representative of a broader category of Mitziut, right? Reality related halacha rather than conceptual related ones, right? Because, yes. No, because that's where it says, no, the whole Torah is comparison. No, it means like all Torah-esque categories, we do that all the time.
Right, the Torah categories are like, it would be much more strange
to grab a Gzera Shavim. It's not a Gzera Shavim. Vididami is not a Gzera Shavim. It's like logical comparisons, right? It's analogies and stuff like that. That's true of a lot of categories of law, not just biblical law. I don't know. If you could find someone who would say it's only true of biblical law, not rabbinic law, that would be interesting. I don't know of anybody who says it. Right, meaning the Rabbeinu Gershom also, you know, seems to, you know, focus on some other trefot-like things. But the common denominator seems to be all these, you know, reality-based halacha. Okay, so let's stop there for now, and now let's go to the Rashbam, because this took us a bit longer than I thought it would, but that's fine. So look at the Rashbam. The Rashbam says, Ad Shiyomro, let's go back to the beginning. Ad Shiyomro halacha l'maaseh. So he says, Dechevan sheshal al yidei ma'aseh, ve'en en yonin bedavar el amashu hu omer lohem, right, did this we read yesterday. The problem with paskening based on what someone did, rather than someone telling you, this is the halacha in this case, is you might not know all the facts, right? Ein lo martam chazu beid lo yadom makom acharmin ein lamedin halacha mitoch. Then he goes on to the rest, and he says, elsewhere we say, ein lamedin halacha mitoch mishnah. Right? Elsewhere we say, you're not allowed to learn halacha from a mishnah. Kagon, zeh shekatav b'mishnah, b'alacha kitzirav. Even if a mishnah says halacha is like this, kagon ha'dizna b'mesechet nida, Rabbi Lezer Omar Arba Nashim Dayan Sha'atan. Like the example in Nida, where Rabbi Lezer says there are four women. What's Dayan Sha'atan? I do not expect you to know this, but what do the words literally mean? Their time? No, Dayan, like must speak, Dai. Right? Enough Sha'atan. Sha'a. Their time. It means that there are four women who, if you see blood, right, if you find blood from a woman, right. So normally, so the Mishnah, the first Mishnah Nida, deals with the question of how much do you have to retroject the assumption that she saw it in the past, right? Meaning, you find blood, do you have to assume the woman saw it now, so now she's Tamei from now on, and therefore anything she touched is Tamei only from now on? Or do you have to assume that she saw it a day ago, and therefore any tarot she dealt with... Correct, but you didn't see it flowing. You find it, right? Correct, so now you have to figure out how much in the past do I have to assume she actually saw it and it'll affect, therefore, anything she touched, which would be Tamei and things like that. Right, so Rabbi Lazar said there are four women who always Dayan Sha'atan, right? That you assume that it's only Tamei from here on in, etc.
Like four types of women?
Yes, four types of women. Yoledet, right, meaning a woman who's pregnant because she normally stopped bleeding, so it's very rare for her to have bled during pregnancy, right? And therefore, if you see the blood, you assume that it's new because there's no reason, right? A normal woman who's menstruating, right, if you see the blood, there's no reason to assume that it only happened now. She bleeds on a regular basis, literally, right? Right, that's all, right? I mean, periodically, that's where it comes from, right? But certain women, zikena, meaning postmenopausal, right? Right? It's going to be very rare that she's going to. And if you see it, because there's no reason, because in general she doesn't see, there's a chazaka that she didn't see, and therefore if you see you, so now you saw the blood, so now you have to assume that she's tmeya, but only from here on in, right? A child who is, right, who has not yet had her first period, right? So when you see it, then you assume that this is her first period, so you don't have to retroject it, right? The four cases, 1 second, it's Kena, Yoledet, Meneket. There's a woman who's nursing.
Oh, is that not common?
It used to be less common.
What's that used to be?
They think scientifically, that when women were less healthy than they are now, like they had less nutrition, when they were nursing, it drained their body so much. Even nowadays, put it this way, even nowadays, the American government, if you go on there, like, right, the whatever, right, if you, like the official health, whatever, yeah, whatever. A woman until 6 months after a baby is born, if she is nursing exclusively, the American government recognizes that as effective birth control because it is like 97% effective or something, at least for 6 months. If a woman is exclusively breastfeeding, her body is unlikely to ovulate.
And they understand this at the time. I mean, I think
it's Matthias. Right. Nowadays, at some point, that becomes less true, right? As you introduce food and it's less exclusive. But apparently, in the time of Chazal, where formula wasn't an option, right, and women and baby food really wasn't a thing, right? The way you, how do you make baby food? You chewed your own food and you gave it to your baby, right? That was what they did. And people were just didn't have as much nutrition, right? The toll that it took on a woman's body that prevented from ovulating naturally lasted longer. Yeah, so this is actually a scientific thing. This is not like, sometimes when the Gemara said, like when we say like Nishtanu Hateva, nature has changed, that's just like, you know, yeah, whatever. In this case, it happens to be true, meaning even nowadays, if you find a woman who's malnourished and is exclusively breastfeeding, she will very unlikely ovulate for much longer periods of time. In America, where that's the case, and people are introducing formula and they're whatever, right? But it's still true, right? Meaning the, look, I know that in the more Haredi circles where birth control is considered usur at basically all stages of marriage, women who want to control their birth, right, will often exclusively nurse much longer because that's the one type of birth control that is, you know, you can't question halakhically. The Gemara brings it up, right? The Gemara, because in the time of the Gemara, it was totally normal to exclusively nurse for 2 years. Yeah, exactly. Meaning the Gemara says that it was totally normal 2 years and not abnormal to totally nurse till the baby was 4 to 5 years old.
So they weren't, so I guess they weren't like, they weren't having babies.
Yes. The Gemara says that it was normal, and look, the Gemara says totally normal was 24 months. And therefore, until 24 months, the Gemara says that, the Gemara says, up until 24 months, even if a baby stops nursing, you're allowed to bring it back to nursing, right? Because it was a normal nursing period. After 24 months, so once the baby stops nursing for 72 hours, right? The baby is considered weaned and you can't reintroduce it to nursing. But up till 4 or 5, if the baby has not been weaned, right? So you can continue, right, nursing. So Mark talks about this as like a normal thing that happened. They're not doing this for all types of things, right? For like suba, right? Like if a couple gets divorced, right, until what point is it expected, right, like as part of like the deal, so to speak, right? Because right nowadays you would say, how could you force a woman to nurse, right? But the answer was there wasn't formula. So if the mother decided she didn't want to nurse, that meant that the father probably had to hire a wet nurse, right? So there were actual monetary implications to how long can you expect a mother to be responsible for it rather than a husband have to find a wet nurse, right? Right, so there are, so the Gemara discussed this in several contexts. Fine. So the Gemara, one of the women who is Dayan Sha'atan, because she's probably not ovulating, therefore not having her period, which I hope you understand the science, but those are related. Yes, are we?
Yeah.
Do I have to explain this? Right? A woman menstruates with a failed, from the body's perspective, ovulation. Right? Meaning if she becomes pregnant, then the egg becomes a baby. Right? If she does not become pregnant, then the egg and the endometrial lining, which was building up, the body gets rid of it. And that's called menstruation. Okay? Therefore, if she's not ovulating, she can't menstruate. Fine. So the Gemara says, Amasra kamati shvevi de zavak, avi yoledit bezov, me eat lei, divi rilazar bezov, bezov. Okay, all the different examples. And then he gives another example from Yevamot. Let's skip down to like 5 lines down. V'ilav depasik bigmara. You got it? Like 5 lines in? Right? In all these cases, if the Gemara hadn't said, halacha kimoto, lo samchin apsak de matnisen. If the Gemara hadn't clarified who the halakha was like, the fact that the Mishnah said the halakha is like that is not enough. We never paskin straight by the Mishnah because of the other positions, right? As we know from the Tosefta and things like that. But then he says, and this is what we have to move to understand. What could the Gemara mean when it says you're not allowed to paskin from the Gemara? Isn't that a problem? Isn't the basis of our psak?
Well, yeah.
The Bavli. Okay, good. So he says, "Aval b'halachot apsukot b'divrei ha'amorain." If you have a straight, unargued halacha in the Amoraim, vaday samchina. You do obviously rely on it. Why? The chevan shepaskum v'katvum, since it was ruled upon and written down by Rav Ashi v'Ravina, shehem sof hora'a. And they are the end of the period of halachic rulings. Sof hora'ah. They are the last word in psak. Vaday alayhu samchinon. Of course we rely on them. Matzinu lameidin heichad depal yachad eitzel rabim. Like when we have an individual that argues on a majority, kahani lo samchinon psak halacha shel mishnah. In that case, we don't just automatically go with the Pesach and the Mishnah. Ella imkein posek b'gimara. Unless the Gemara rules like it. Aval apsak di Gemara samchinan. But the Gemara we do rely on. Di chulhu havu halacha l'ma'aseh. Because all of the Gemara is intended to be practical law. But sometimes you'll have the Rabbi Yochanan himself with machmir for himself. So what does that mean? Yeah, meaning Rabbi Yochanan had a higher standard. But he said, so this is fascinating. What does he say? He says, Rabbi Yochanan said, you can't rely on a halacha until a posek tells you this is practical law. But he was actually being machmir. Very good. So now he says, but what, so according to Rashbam, what is the real standard? At what point is something considered practical record of halacha? Any code that was meant to be practical law, followed practically, and therefore the Gemara counts for him. Our Gemara counts. The Mishnah doesn't. Why? Like, think about what the Rashbam is saying. Mishnah isn't practical law because what is it meant to be? A record of the basic opinions, basic laws, but not a fleshed out code, for lack of a better word. Even though the Gemara is not really a code, but okay. But a fleshed out record of practical law is practically authoritative. Okay, now we got to figure out. 1 second. So let's finish the Rashbam, and then let's try to figure out what this means for us. So he says, "Vahainu taima." Why was Rabbi Yochanan even more stringent? Did Dilma Hadarimu Psak Halakha Shepasak? Because he was worried that maybe someone retracted. V'yira lo tam acher be'inav, and we'll find a different reason. Umihu le'achar p'tirato, but after such a posek would die. Yishlam lasot mashe pasak. You do follow his, you do follow his decision. As long as someone paskin that way his whole life and he never retracted, so then you can rely on that position. And therefore, of course, you can follow the halachot in our Gemara. Why? Because they were organized with the intent to be practical law. Because the Gemara Bava Metzia says, "Rav Ashi v'Ravina sof hora'ah." Ulemi nishal od b'shat maaseh. Who else should you ask? Im lo nismoch halachot apsukot b'Gemara. If you're not going to look at the Gemara, who the heck are you going to ask? Kimoshe sidran Rav Ashi. Dekadanu ov Ashi amr lalachol maaseh. Ha'ein adam rashay l'chavdeish davar me'ata. And therefore, you can't invent new law. You do what the later generations of Amoraim said. Rabbi Zera, b'shem Shmuel, Amar Ein Lamedin Lo Mipi Alachot V'Lo Min Agadot. V'lo minato seftot. And in the Yerushalmi, therefore, it says the opposite of the Bavli. The Bavli says, don't learn from the Gemara. The Yerushalmi says, don't learn from the Halachot or the Agadot, but do learn from the Gemara. What does that mean? So this is how he did it. He says, Klomar, mi divrei ha'amorain. Learn from the Amoraim. V'lo mipi ma'aseh ha'katuv b'mishnah. Not cases in the Mishnah. Right? Because on the pligi rabim aleh, ha'chiyom ra'alach l'ma'aseh. Klomar, kain, halacha, leich, maaseh, kain. Inam, isher yomer lo, halacha, kidei lasot maaseh. Kigon, sheba, vishal, lachachamim, maaseh, ba liyadi, heich, kidei lasot kach. Va'omer lo, halacha, gaploni, ava, bisham, rustam, zeo, halacha, lemaaseh. So the Rashbam reads our Gemara, and what is the real principle that he derives from it? That something is not authoritative unless what? It was written with the intent to be the final word of law. Because if it wasn't meant to be the final word, it's just a record of opinions. But therefore, he says, when the Gemara, our Gemara says, don't learn from the Gemara, what does it mean? It doesn't mean the Talmud Bavli. What does it mean? Like the Lamdus. But obviously our Gemara is not that. It's code. Right? Not a code, but it's a record of final law. And he says, therefore, the Bavli says don't learn from the Gemara. The Yerushalmi says do learn from the Gemara. So how does the Rashbam deal with it? He says, what it means is don't learn from a record of arguments. Learn from?
Fact.
Not fact. Learn from? Yes. Learn from things that were written with the intent to be the bottom line. So he argues that it wasn't. Right? The way the Rashbam understands our sugya. But the Mishnah, he doesn't think of that. He thinks the Mishnah is a compendium of the positions rather than the bottom line. Right? This is what he's assuming. This is how he's reading the Gemara. Right? Okay, good. Yeah. Good. Now, so what we're going to have to deal with tomorrow, and this is why I thought maybe we'd get past the Rashbam, but apparently not. But okay, that's fine. Right? Is that the Rashbam forces you to ask the real question, which is, the Rashbam looks at our Gemara and says, it can't mean what it seems to mean, which is don't learn halacha from the Gemara, because, well, we do. And therefore, the Rashbam reinterprets, and he says the real rule that emerges from our Gemara is never derive halacha from anything that's meant to be a record of learning, of opinions, rather than meant to be a record of the bottom line, of the worked out stock. And the Bavli is that, right? That's the Rashbam's assumption, right? But what does the Rashbam never actually explain to you? Why? How? Where did the Bavli magically get the power to become the final word on all things Jewish? Right? He just assumes it. Right? Meaning, what's the Rashbam doing? The Rashbam is trying to figure out how our Gemara doesn't militate against our practice of treating the Bavli as the final word in all things Jewish. Right? So, good. So Rashbam's answer is simply, well, the Bavli is meant to be the final word, and therefore you can rely on it. What's the problem? No. Okay. Sometimes the Gemara doesn't have a final word. That doesn't mean that when it does have a final word, it means to be the final word. That's not a kasha. The bigger question is, so what? If my goal in life is to be the final word on all things Jewish, does that mean now you can rely on me? Meaning, fine. The Gemara doesn't have the problem with the Mishnah. According to Rashbam, the Mishnah never intended to be the final word. The Gemara did. Yes?
Yeah.
But the Rashbam doesn't answer the bigger question, which is, it's very nice that the Gemara wanted to be the final word. And I know there's a lot of people in this world who want to be the final word on all things Jewish, but so what? Right? That's the question that you have to ask. And it's because of this Rashbam that suddenly, right, this is where everybody asks it. Now, we're not done. Sit. Tomorrow we'll deal with the Yerushalmi, but before we do that, I want to just look quickly at the Ritva, which you can look at the Mukhayosid, the Ritva is slightly clearer, but he has a slightly different way to this sugya. Slightly. He says, I'll just read it to you. Mar halacha savar halacha adifa, going back to yesterday's sugya. He says, why is halacha adifa? So he does this pirish to mashma halacha lidorot. Shilo horeyesh lomar haitahora asha. He said the real problem with paskening based on a particular case is maybe it was extenuating circumstances not meant to be halacha forever. Okay, fine. Then he says, umar savar ma'aseh adif. Why would you say that a case is better? He said the problem is simply as follows. Most cases aren't extenuating circumstances. So unless the postik specified that it was an extenuating circumstance, you don't have to assume that it was. Hilkoch maase rav, v'chein derech ha-gaonza lomar de maase adif. But now on our line, ein lemeidin halacha mipi talmud, right? So according to the Rashbam, how does he solve the problem that the Bavli is binding? He just says that Gemara doesn't mean our Gemara. What does it mean? It means Limud rather than the text called the Gemara. The Ritva's Girsa is Ein Lamedin Halacha Mipi Talmud, right? Not Gemara, but Talmud. He says, Perush, Talmud Shel Tanaim, Sha'amru V'mishna Halacha Devei Ploni. Talmud means, not Talmud, but Limud of the Tanaitic material. Ki ulai divrei yachid hem, because maybe it's a single position. Umiu ba'omer lo zazu misham ha-shekavu halacha kmoto. But when they actually say, this is the halacha, ein lecha psak gadol mimenu kidachidim b'perkam v'tepzachim. There is no greater psak. Umiu Talmud she'omar amoraim davar pashutu she'omedim min halacha u'ma'aseh. Obviously the amoraim you rely on, she'im lo kein almin nismoch. Because if not, who else should we rely on? V'davar pashutu she'lo diber tana debrait el v'talmud shel tana'im she'aya bizmano. And it's clear that by Talmud they didn't mean our Talmud, they meant their Talmud, which was the Mishnah. Right, that's as confusing as you can get. Okay, so that, right, it's similar to the Rashbam, similar, but again, the question that we're therefore left with is,
according to that, what would we call this?
Now, Gemara. In the time of the Gemara, I don't know. Now, just before we finish, let me just make the question stronger. And that is the next line in the Gemara, right? The next line in the Gemara is, Amr lu Rabba l'Rav Papa l'Rav Huna b'rei d'Rav Yeshua. Rabba told Rav Papa and Rav Huna, ki ati piska didina didi l'kamaychu, when a shayla comes to you that I paskened on, v'chazidu be'pircha, and you have a question on it, lo tikra'uhu, don't rip it up, meaning don't reject me out of hand, adatidu l'kamay, until you ask me, i'it li taima, amina l'chu, because if I have an answer, I'll tell you the answer to your question. V'ilo, and if your question is so good that it rejects my position, what will I do? I'll back down. Hadarnabi, I'll retract. But l'achar mita, but after I die, if you have a shayla on what I said, lo mikra tikru'u, don't tear up what I said, umigvar na'ami lo tigmaru minei, nor should you learn from it. Lo mikra tikru'ine, don't tear it up, why not? Di'i vayatam dil mahavi amina l'chudayma, because if I were alive, maybe I would have an explanation. But, migvar na'ami lo tigmaru minei, don't paskin based on it, why not? Because, right? No, that's. I mean, maybe I don't have a defense. And what's your job as a posek? You have to pasken based on what your eyes see. Now this makes it worse. Why? Because what is the fundamental rule that the Gemara introduces about psak? Don't ever rely on dead people because no one's perfect. Your responsibility is to rely on the truth as you understand it. So if someone's dead, you can't just throw it out because maybe they have an explanation, but you can't rely on them either because you see a question and you can't just rely on authority. Now, this only makes the problem worse because according to the Rashbam, we actually do just rely on the Bavli on authority, right? But that's exactly what the Gemara just said you cannot do. Right? What?
It's the difference between a book and a book. It's the thing you're saying. That not that you use like final words to be this absolute final word.
Is the Gemara final word or not? We treat it as such. But the problem is the Gemara just said, right? Even if you solve the problem of the Rashbam, that don't learn from the Gemara doesn't mean Gemara. You have a bigger problem, which the Gemara says the fundamental rule in Psak is, Ein l'dayan l'mashein avrohov. You have to follow what? The truth as you see it. You can't just rely on someone dead on their authority. The problem is, that is literally what we do in the Bavli. We rely on it on authority. And that's why this is it becomes the jumping off point for Poskim to say, how exactly did we get to the world we live in where the Bavli is the last word, right? It seems to go against, this is what the Rashbam is struggling with, right? I mean, the Rashbam half answers the question, which is you can rely on anything that's meant to be psak. Okay, and still, so fine, the Gemara was meant to be psak. But then the Gemara said you can't rely on dead people, right? If you have a kasha. How many of you, haven't been learning, serious Gemara for that many years, right? Even if you learned seriously all of high school, let me assume that you did. Fine. But even so, in the 5 years you've been learning Gemara, let's say seriously. I'm going to be generous here, right? Let me ask you a simple question, then we'll end. Have you ever felt when you were learning a sugya that you weren't fully compelled by the Gemara's presentation? Ever. Has that ever happened to you? Oh, very good. Okay, so Ellie's like, today. Okay, good. So I don't know if it's today, yesterday, but at some point in your life, you probably had Akasha. So why is it that when it comes to Bavli, our answer is? You have to follow it anyways and work hard to understand it, right? Why don't we just say, the Gemara itself said, don't follow dead people because you have to follow what you think is the truth, right? If you had the how many of you can you imagine? I'll ask you because I know that in your high school it probably went over even worse than it would in the rest of their high schools. Let's say you would have said to one of your Abayim in high school, I have a kasha in this Gemara, and the Gemara says you don't rely on dead people because you got to follow the truth, your own truth. So therefore, I'm going to paskin against the Bavli based on how I understand Tanakh. How long would you have lasted in that classroom? Imagine yourself, go back to your Chavetz Chaim days. Yes. Okay, so now we got to understand the Gemara, because, right? This is not how we treat the Gemara, right? We treat the Gemara as the final word. So the question is, why doesn't this violate all rules that we know that the Gemara itself just introduced about Psak? Right. This is why I said it. Right. All I wanted to do was read the Gemara Rashbam carefully because suddenly you just realize that the question is just jumping out at you when you just read the Gemara carefully. The entire basis of our authority in the Gemara has to be examined. Okay? That's what we're going to try to do. I figured we had to do this at some point this year.
That's
right?
Really,
what?
This is like really staring at like what the pillars of Judaism. Like,
it's not like by the end I'm going to say, yes, Rami, go ahead. If you have a kasha in the Gemara, do whatever you want. I'm not going to say that.
No,
right? But I'm going to try to understand it with you. I will show you someone who will more or less say that, but not, well, the Dora V.E. is not going to go too far from that. Not practically, he'll just say that's going to be a vet. I mean, look, You will see that the Dor Ravi will say that not now, but he says as soon as Mashiach comes, we're going to take the Gemara and relegate it to the dustbin of history and start again, or the Gemara will just be another Shita. He actually thinks that's what's going to happen. But we'll get there, okay?